dun 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 bum 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 dun 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 dun. And then it's like, the fussy fellas, verdant viewers, viewers, bum 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 ba.
Hello and welcome to Fossy Fellas Verdant Viewers, the podcast about the FX musical drama series Fossy Verdant, ran for 8 weeks, is still running. Is still in the May of its life.
From 2012 to 2019.
a long gestating musical drama series about the lives of Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon, and the way that their lives tangle up in one another's, just like a tango, you could say. Dance, the ultimate art form in a lot of ways. My name is Jimmy Blackman.
And my name is Marty Scanlon.
And we are together, the Fosse Fellas / the Verdant Viewers.
You might know us from the famous, acclaimed series, yes. Critically acclaimed series, Smash Bros, where we watch Smash and become bros.
Famous for a iTunes reviewer telling us we should change our fucking name and rating it 1 star.
Yeah, and telling us that they wish that we were a Super Smash Bros podcast. And I just want to say that person probably only plays NES.
That's right. That friggin' dummy, and I know what that means. I know it means Nintendo Entertainment System, but I also know what it means. Like, I get it in a lot of ways. I get it, and I'm keyed into it. But this week, and for the next few weeks, we're the Fosse Fellas, and we're also the Verdant Viewers. And that's because we're jazzed about a little show called Fosse Verdant on the FX network. The Fosse X Verdon Network, and
the Fosse X Verdon Universe.
That's right, and we're excited to gab about it a little bit, and we're gabbing this week about episode 2 entitled "Who's Got the Pain."
Yeah, this was a real fun one. So I guess just like jumping right into this, I think the thing that's been most cool about this is that for me, you know, I've talked before about how much I loved All That Jazz and how much I really have an appreciation and a respect for this stuff. But, like, I did not know a ton of, like, Fosse's work and Gwen Verdon's work. Like, I just didn't know a ton of their stuff. And so it's been a real treat for me to, like, watch the actual things that they're recreating in the FX series, where a lot of my exposure to this stuff for the first time is in this series, and then going back and
stuff. go down the YouTube rabbit hole and see the real thing.
Yeah, it's been amazing, and I'm just like watching all these interviews of Gwen Verdon as you know, in her later years, and just being like, holy shit, Michelle Williams is doing an unbelievable performance.
Right. So starting off on this episode, Let me ask the big overarching question that the title begs. Marty, who's got the pain?
When they do the mambo?
Yeah.
I just feel like who's got the pain when they go erp?
I mean, if I go erp, it's probably because I've got the pain. Like, that's a toe-stubbing sound, right?
Right. You got the pain big time.
Yeah, I think I liked this episode a lot. I think I liked the premiere, but the premiere, you know, you're so, like, dazzled just by the newness of it all, that it's a little bit of a just like, okay, but what's this going to be as a mini-series, as a limited series? Like, what is this show going to settle into?
Yeah, and the storytelling really going to feel like?
Right. And I think this episode did a really nice job of sort of setting the template for it. You know, it used the same structure that we'd seen of sort of a flashback narrative, but this time flashing back. It's actually an interesting thing because the first episode started with them in like right near the time of Bob Fosse's death, and then would flash back to the making of Cabaret, and then this episode picks up at the making of Cabaret, and then flashes back to the making of Damn Yankees, right? Like,
yeah,
the period that we're seeing, the older period for them is the younger period in the previous episode. Am I right about the timeline of that?
I think so.
Like, I think all this beach stuff takes place fairly shortly after, because they're talking about like how he's in love with the translator and all that, so that's happening fairly
short. Can't be that soon. I mean, it can't be that late after that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to be like the kind of the immediate fallout of her walking in with the gorilla mask and seeing.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's an interesting, just structurally, it's interesting that it takes that same format, but makes the flashback in the previous one the present in this one.
Right. I think something sort of interesting about just talking about this in general is that, like, you saying, like, you know, the first of the pilot is taking place right, you know, moments before his death. And, like, this show, and I don't know if it's just because it's handled with such care by the people who make it, or there's such reverence for the material and for the people, but, like, it feels like Bob Fosse worked on this show.
Right, right.
Do you know what I mean?
And I think part of that is because of the looming presence of all that jazz and all this, in that he made something that was prescient of his own death. I mean, Bob Fosse made... Like, that's why all that jazz, one of the reasons why all that jazz is such a, like, interesting cultural artifact is because he made a movie about his own death, essentially, and then not that long thereafter died in the way that he
posited he probably would have.
Yeah, so it's just sort of this interesting thing where it's like, I think seeing another, I mean, we talked about this a little bit last week, but seeing another biographical portrayal of it, you can't help but think, like, oh, that's interesting that, like, they're still telling this narrative sort of in the way that he massaged the narrative in all that jazz. Which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is, you feel that presence of him.
Yes, the presence is definitely there.
Though, I think this episode, one step forward that this episode had, that one of the reasons I liked it more than last week is because this definitely did feel to me, and I'd be interested to, like, you know, take a clicker to the amount of dialogue time or screen time or whatever, but this felt like a more Gwen-forward episode.
Absolutely, and which I loved. I just, you know, it's like I said at the top here, but I think Michelle Williams is doing, like, a truly fantastic job, but I think it just the writing in general is just so interesting to see this character lived in multiple ages, and I think her performance throughout these different years is really, really interesting and really nuanced, and I'm like really, really enjoying watching it a lot.
I had the interesting experience while I was watching the episode this afternoon where I actually didn't end up doing it because I was just focused on the episode, but I had this urge to, like, take out my phone and Google Michelle Williams's age, because, like, I think just because she's been around for a long time, I know vaguely how old she is, but I just, like, I couldn't pin down while watching it if she was closer in age to what she's playing in the present or what she's playing in flashback, because she does such a good job of physically embodying.
Yeah.
And I mean, part of that's like hair and makeup and all this stuff, but I think a lot of it is the way that she just controls her movements in a way where in the Damn Yankees section, it feels like she is in her, you know, whatever, late 20s or something. And in the other section, it feels like she's in her late 40s or whatever it is. And I think she's really somewhere in the middle of that, but she has such physical control, which is such a great thing when she's playing a dancer, and specifically a dancer who's movement is all about those little physical movement, like, right, those isolations so well.
Yeah, I guess my only small gripe with all of it so far is that once I've gone back and watched the original stuff, the original choreography of Fosse Verdon, you know, of them doing their stuff, especially like the Damn Yankees bit, I watched the original, like, you know,
from the movie. Yeah,
you texted me today before and just said, hey, if you haven't seen this, you should really look it up, and I hadn't seen it, and I watched it, and I was just, like, blown away by the choreography. And I think the only thing that's missing in the show right now is that their dancing is not that good.
I mean, that's the like, you sort of either need a lot of CGI or motion capture, or you just have to cast incredible dancers, and they went with the option of casting incredible actors.
Yeah, and so it's like in a show that's like a biopic, you know, show, and that is about the drama and their lives, I definitely understand, and I don't dock points or whatever from a TV perspective, but I am like,
no, I their felt dancing's that too, not good. Particularly in that scene. I mean, you feel it a little bit in the Who's Got the Mop or Who's Got the Pain sequence, but yeah. I think they cast a good dancer to play her dance partner in that, and sort of you felt a little bit. What I felt it more in was the like audition, quote unquote audition sequence.
Yeah, where and you're kind of like watching people do, like the acting one version of a scene about dancing.
Right. And to me it was and he has maybe more. His job is a little bit harder in that scene than hers, but I particularly felt like Sam Rockwell's, like, it did remind me of Derek on Smash, of just, yeah. like, the way that he teaches,
the like, way tilt, that he... tilt your arm, okay, right. No, you would never do it like that.
Right, and just sort of, like, a shoulder touch and, like, a push forward, and, like, I get, but that is kind of how a choreographer works, I guess.
Sure.
But it did feel to me like, okay, Sam, get up there and show her what it is. I don't believe for a second... And they do use fun tricks to like the device of having the sort of his like his guilt and
the inner monologue,
his like anxiety exemplified by this tap, like him as a kid tap dancing. I think that's great and does a great job of like imbuing scenes that are just dramatic scenes with that like dancer's energy without him actually having to dance. So I think that is a nice device, but. Yeah, I especially don't buy that Sam Rockwell can dance like Bob Fosse.
It's also just like watching Michelle Williams is good, but like, you know, you watch Gwen Verdon, you know, walking across the stage and like her shoulders are completely isolated and her feet are moving separate and you're like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. And right. then you watch the show and you're like, well, all right, that was all right.
Right.
But then like I think about it and I'm like, I fell down tying my shoes yesterday. So like...
What I mean, I yeah, it's there's a reason that they are making a show about these two people, and
right.
You know, it's like they, and there's a reason Bob Fosse is essentially one of two choreographers that like the average person could name, maybe.
Right.
You know, it's like they were incredibly skilled people,
yeah.
and this show is about like the lives of incredibly skilled people. There's sort of no way to fully recreate that.
I, a minute ago, hiccuped so hard that I'm afraid that it's on the recording forever, but I was at a party this evening with a bunch of, like, people who are, like, Broadway performers and friends of mine who are actors and stuff, and a lot of people were very interested in the fact that we do this podcast.
Well, were they people who had watched the show and had opinions about it?
Oh, yeah. Everyone was like, oh, yeah, you're watching the show. That's amazing.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I do a podcast called Smash Bros, where we watch Smash and become bros. And everyone was like, oh, my God.
Well, I hope you gave them the URL, which is smashbros.fun, and told them to rate, review, and subscribe. And
I did.
If they've been nominated for a Tony, they can come on. Everybody who's not been nominated for a Tony or below, I'll consider them on a case-by-case basis.
One of them was like, if you want a guest for episode 6 or 7, I'm going to have like watched all of it by then. So if you have a guest, let me know. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. I think we could bring some guests into the mix with this.
It's and it was more... Raul Esparza.
And he was sitting at a piano while saying the whole thing. He was going, if you want a guest for this episode, if you want a guest, you know, I was miming playing the piano. I don't know if you could tell that over here, but
I could over FaceTime. Yes.
It
he was like, mock me with praise.
Yeah. Yeah. We're like, no, we're going to just sort of talk about the show. But
have I done my Raul Esparza singing impression on this podcast before?
Possibly, but go for it again. I mean, you did a little there.
It's like 12:08 a.m. right now in New York. So it's only 9:08 in LA, but he's like,
oh yeah,
I
live in Hollywood now, everybody.
He's
we
like,
covered it last week, but you know,
he say?
Drive down, in. Top down on my car. I cut off the
in
top
the, on, the, on the 405,
on the 405, on the 5, on the 101, Santa Monica Boulevard, Pacific Coast Highway, the Palisades. Ever heard of them?
The Palisades, the Getty? Yeah. Dude, the Hollywood Bowl. I hear you're always freaking smoking that Hollywood Bowl.
I smoke that Hollywood Bowl, and the ultimate dank weed is success and fame. Go ahead.
He's like, oh shit, I put myself on the spot.
Yeah,
he's
you
like,
did.
He's like, Let me be you. Nope. Forget it.
Marty's pinching his nose. Come on. Go for it.
He's like, very minded, but alone, he's alone, not alone. Like, just a little flap.
That's good. Yeah. And if you ever do it, like, on stage as an impression, you need to, like, sort of, like, put your shoulders back a little bit and look like you're, like, physically kind of uncomfortable with the way that you're singing. But, like that you just, like, have this look on your face like this monster of a voice is coming out of your body and you can't quite control it.
And I do want to say that I think he's, like, an unbelievably talented performer and admire him dearly, but I just got to do impressions of the people that I can do, like Lin-Manuel, who I also admire greatly, but I can do a good impression of him, so...
Well, you got to do that now. I also think I do a pretty good job of fake Lin-Manuel rapping. Like, I don't think the voice is quite right, but the, like, freestyle just like, and so I went to the bodega, and that's when I saw, and I... Wait, that was terrible. Hold on. No, that was really bad. That was really bad, but I have done it well before. Hold on. I just have to reset because that was... You start by just saying neighborhoods. You just go like, Bushwick, Bed-Stuy, Crown Heights boy. I was born in Uptown, but now I work downtown, the public theater. That's where I work. Everybody says you're really great, and I say, do I just twerk? I don't know. Like, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That wasn't very good either, but
No, that was the right idea.
I've done it better before.
Mine is like his rap impression, but then it's also his singing impression. So it's like, This is Lin-Manuel Miranda at the park.
Yeah.
My son is on the other slide. And he's like,
you got workshop material here. This is unfair.
Oh, yeah. And then he's
go for it. Keep going.
He's like, oh, Philip, you outshine the morning sun. My son. What rhymes with sun? Sun is not the word I'm looking for. There is so much more. Again, love Lin-Manuel and admire him greatly.
One of the EPs on this show, you know, probably on a lot of conference calls.
Him and is Thomas Kail, Tommy Kail, is he an EP or is he just the director?
I think he's an EP. I think Tommy Kail's in EP territory.
Good for him. I think he's doing a wonderful directing job.
Yeah, I do too. This show did a ballsy thing, which I guess you can kind of get away with in a limited series, and I think they did get away with here, but in episode 2 of the show, they already have, like, flashbacks to things that happened in episode one. Remember this way. It's like, that was last week, but it did work.
I was like, yeah, I dig that. It's just like, all right, let's just, we all remember that.
Right. Let's talk plot of this episode a little bit. So it's the main focus is, interestingly, because we talked about Damn Yankees a bit on the show last week, but is about sort of the meeting of Gwen Verdon and Bob Fosse in the rehearsal process for Damn Yankees. And it sort of goes through the out-of-town tryouts of Damn Yankees and them starting an affair while they're both... Bob's married to an actress who is dying, and Gwen is in a relationship with an actor, and they start an affair
with the actor playing Joe DiMaggio in Smash.
Essentially, yeah, sort of a little bit of a Buff DiMaggio type there. But I think this show does a great job of, like, that, just saying it right there, I was like, oh, that takes place over, like, you know, maybe 3 to 6 months of time, this episode. Yeah. But it never feels montage-y in a bad way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, or stretched out weirdly. It just sort of feels like the appropriate moments for each moment.
Right. And it feels like it has the energy of something that is... that is over a shorter period of time. Like, it feels like it has just a natural rhythm to the storytelling, which I think that is, like, a sign of good directing, that it is able to condense story in this way that feels like each beat follows the previous beat.
Yeah. I watched this a couple days ago, so I'm honestly having kind of... I also was at a party with people and drank and then went, oh my god, why did I drink tonight? I have to record an episode of Fosse Fellows Verdon Viewers.
I think, like I said this over text, but I think Bob Fosse would be proud of you drinking before doing ostensibly quote-unquote work.
That's true. Know, well, it's like how you have a cigarette dangling from your mouth right now.
Yeah. That somehow the physics of that, it's a full 90-degree droop that he accomplishes. Like, I think he's got that tied to a tooth or something like that.
That's how they get rid of, when kids have loose teeth, they tie a cigarette to it, and then they just do a dance move. And
It's a kill two birds with one stone thing, because it also accomplishes the, like, you know, if we catch you smoking, we'll stick 50 cigarettes, we'll make you smoke a whole pack or whatever. They inflict physical pain with a cigarette, which has a Pavlovian effect on the kids.
Indeed.
But yes, I mean, okay, so it basically just tracks that the big there's sort of two big, like, dramatic points of conflict. One is professional. We see that this rehearsal process and all that is going well, but Bob, we learn, always really wanted to be a dancer. He moved out to Hollywood thinking he could be Fred Astaire, and yeah, ended up sort of having to become a choreographer as a backup, and he really wants to be a dancer, and he makes the suggestion of replacing this dancer is not really killing it in this number
with himself,
and the producers and the writers and director and all that turn down the idea, and he gets drunk and angry at them, but then instead choreographs a new number, which is a success, the titular right, Who's Got the Pain. And then the other ongoing thing is the relationship stuff, Gwen dealing with learning about his wife's illness, and initially saying that she doesn't want to break up their marriage, but then coming around and deciding that they will each leave their partners, and so those are the two sort of competing narratives happening on this episode,
right? And also I love that moment of, like, maybe you'll do better. That his wife who's sick,
right,
saying, like, I know what's happening here, and he's always been this way, and maybe right, maybe you'll do better than I did or whatever. And I loved that. I thought that was really, really cool. I really like that actress a lot. I don't know her name.
I do too. I looked up her name while watching, and I don't recall what it is, and I didn't really know her from anything, but she has that sort of, but one thing, I also looked up the character, and she looks, like, remarkably like the character that she played, and that actress is great. She just has this very, like, certain, this was the case with Mad Men too, where I always felt there were certain actors who really popped in this way where they just felt of that era.
Yes,
John Hamm was, like, the great example of that, where his career has never really been able to fully flourish since then, because he just so fully feels like he fits in that era. She was similar for me, where it felt like I just totally bought her as this character.
Totally. In All That Jazz, is Anne Rankin's character Gwen Verdon, or is Anne Rankin the wife? I don't remember.
I don't remember either, but I know that there is a character in All That Jazz who is a Gwen Verdon analog.
And I don't remember if she's...
It's been a while since I've seen All That Jazz. I should rewatch it. Maybe we'll rewatch it.
Yeah, maybe we'll rewatch it.
This or something like that.
That'd be cool.
Because we talked about doing that anyway on the show, you know, separate.
It's just impossible to get. It's a friend bought us the DVD. So I finally have the DVD.
It's interesting, because we also talked about doing the company cast recording thing, and that's a similar thing where there is no, I mean, obviously now you can watch the Documentary Now thing, but if you want to watch the real thing, there's no way
it's impossible to find
that online.
Yo, the Company Documentary Now thing is so good.
It is.
Have we talked about this on here? It's so
good. I don't think we really have. I think we maybe briefly mentioned it last week.
Oh my god, I've watched it so many times. It's ridiculous.
It's perfect. I had high expectations for it, and they were
me too.
They were exceeded, because I didn't think that Mulaney would necessarily be even attempting a Sondheim impression. I thought, like, he would just be playing his own version of that kind of director, but he does. Like, I don't think of Mulaney as necessarily a great impressionist or a great actor. I think he's an amazing stand-up, but and like a funny sketch actor. But he gets some of Sondheim's little ticks.
Yeah,
down.
It's like the essence of it is there.
Yeah,
I mean, I've always famously said that Nick Kroll should play Stephen Sondheim.
I know, and you're really causing fights in the Oh Hello Green Room.
Oh Hello Writers Room, yeah.
By saying this, you're going to tear them apart. I don't know. I think Kroll has a great physical resemblance for it. I would be interested to see it. I feel like he might go a little too hard on the, like, you have to have a light touch to play something.
No, I agree. I agree.
But okay, yeah. So what else? We get to see this. Who's got the pain? Number that is choreographed. Which again, the same thing that I said to Marty. I'll say to the listeners: if you haven't seen this, watch the version from the movie. Damn,
it's unbelievable.
Bob Fosse
good.
Does do the dance in that. He didn't do it in the stage show, but it is Bob Fosse in the movie, and
it's incredible.
It's just like, yeah, I think a lot of people would say, like, oh, the best way to, like, understand Bob Fosse maybe would be watch, like, Chicago or something like that. But I think the best, like, 3-minute encapsulation is weirdly this number from Damn Yankees, because it just shows, like, the full rate. It doesn't go too far into the, like, all that,
like, jazzy, stereotypical Fosse
territory.
Territory.
It just shows, like, what he was like working on a sort of quote-unquote normal musical.
It also shows like the physical body line that he was interested in, and the choreography, just like the pictures that he obviously was interested in making are so beautiful and so unique. And I admittedly did not have a huge understanding beyond, like, oh, Bob Fosse choreography is like weird things with your hands, and like watching them do stuff together is like, oh my god, it's like gorgeous. Right. I was like blown away watching it. I loved it.
There's something that I don't think they actually mention it in this episode, but I was telling Marty, living in LA, not the Santa Monica Boulevard Hollywood Bowl jokes, but just one change in life is like I'm driving more, and so I've been listening to the radio more, and I've heard multiple interviews on NPR this week about Fosse Verdon, and one of them was an archival interview with Gwen Verdon, and I think it was in that she talked about how when he was choreographing the whatever Lola Wants dance, like the way that he talked about it and the way that she viewed it, and they kind of touch on this, but is like not that it is a seduction, but it's someone who doesn't understand seduction's like childlike impression of seduction. And I think that's an interesting lens to view his choreography through in general, is that it's like it's a garish sketch comedy impression of sex appeal, kind of like everything is just this like overly done but very specific kind of thing that is like it has this weird like I don't know how to describe it exactly, but it creates this like weird guttural feeling in you where that's like not, you don't often feel, but like you see his dance and you're just like, oh, that's weird. I'm like, I don't know what to make of that in a good way.
It hits you in the body.
Right.
Yeah, I get that. I think something that's very interesting about all of this conversation, Jimmy, is that like so much of the stuff that we've been talking about, kind of easily and quickly spins off into like our own opinions and experience and other things about real life. And I just keep on bringing this back to Smash because I think it's interesting, but like it's so interesting how this show, how much less we're talking about plot points and how much more we're talking about like the artistry and the interesting things that they're creating, as opposed to like, remember this scene and this conversation. And you know, it's impossible to compare this show to a fictional network television, or it's just, it's impossible to compare them, but it is interesting to be like, wow, these are the conversations that are being born from this thing, as opposed to, you know, X, Y, or Z.
Well, I think that's, I mean, on one hand, that's because it's just better and there's less bumps in the road to point out. But I also think this show, Smash in a way was very like set piece forward. Like anytime a song came on, it was like, and now let's watch this song. And Fosse Verdon, for all its razzle and dazzle, doesn't care about impressing us as much as Smash did, in a way where I feel like it would rather you like just look at Michelle Williams' eyes and just focus on her emotion for a minute. And then, and there's a song, or like, or, and a good example is when Bob Fosse is like in the wings watching them, the actors perform You Gotta Have Heart near the end of the episode, where it's like, there's a song happening, but you're not, it doesn't really matter what's happening on stage. You're not supposed to be paying any attention to that. You're supposed to be paying attention just to this sort of melancholy look in Bob Fosse's eyes. And that's right, what sort matters. Of inner life. And so I think when a show cares more about the inner life, it makes you and me think about ourselves more. When a show cares about very surface level things like Smash, it makes you go, all right, well, let's talk about that surface level thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. I keep on going back to Michelle Williams and how amazing she's doing three different ages of Gwen Verdon.
Yeah.
And I mean, Sam Rockwell's doing great, but like, I'm
you know what? I mean, if we're going to criticize where the things that I said last week, I continue to feel about Sam Rockwell's performance, to be honest. Yeah, I think it is
a little broad.
It's a little broad. It's a little, I'm not yet that sold on it. It does feel a little bit cigarette droopy out of the mouth.
I had an old acting teacher who called that voices, not choices, which I sort of was like, that's kind of a mean thing to say because it's not quite that bad, but
right. And it is like you're doing the biopic thing. You do have to do those voices. You do have to do that stuff. It's just when you've got Michelle Williams doing a great example of how you can have both voices and choices, where I'm a little bit like, he feels a little uncomfortable in the role or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Something that was interesting, I watched an interview because I watched the beginning of All That Jazz again, which I just love and I go back to all the time. I think it's amazing. I mean, if for any of the listeners that haven't seen All That Jazz, the opening like 6 minutes is just a documentary style shot for shot, like of a audition sequence of like a big giant dance cattle call,
right?
And it's the sort of Bob Fosse stand-in character Joe Gideon, and he's shaking some people's hands and cutting certain people and just saying, sorry, you're not right for this role, or you are right and will you get on. And it's all this huge dance call. And I watched an interview after watching this episode of Bob Fosse and how he said it was really important for Joe Gideon in All That Jazz to have a gentle touch,
right,
with all the actors, and how that's how he remembered those auditions being. He was like, there are so many shows that show the artistic process and it's just complete bullshit. And he said, I really set out to make something that showed the theatrical process and the audition process the way it really was. And I think
it's almost like a testament. Bob Fosse, who died 20 years earlier, got to see Smash, because it's like he's describing. Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, I think it's it's a testament to this show in a lot of ways, where you're seeing it's very much character focused, obviously, but you are seeing what it's like to direct a film, or it's like to put a piece of theater on stage. And
you see the love and like affection that's part of that process.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, and I'm just like really looking forward to every episode because of that.
Me too. I'm recording on my MacBook here, which I forgot to bring my charger home from work this weekend. So, and it's giving me the "we'll sleep soon unless plugged into a power outlet." So
I think this is a good place to wrap up. Yeah. Anyway.
Great. Well, I'm very much looking forward to the next episode. I'm pumped about this show. I like it, and I like that I have no idea. I think we said this last week, but I have no idea what will happen next week.
Truly none.
And that's an exciting thing when it's a show about people whose lives existed. So it's kind of cool to just be like, they can take us wherever we want in these people's lives, and I'm excited to see what they're up to. So until next week, rate, review, subscribe to all that stuff if you want.
All that good stuff. All that jazz.
Until next week,
we'll view you later,
fellas. Oh jeez,
can you tell we're recording over Skype? Goodbye.
Bye.
To find more Smash Bros, go to smashbros.fun. That's smashbros.fun.
Or find us on iTunes, where you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.
Smash Bros is produced in New York City by Marty Scanlon and hosted by Marty and me, Jimmy Blackman.
Jimmy's on Twitter @JimmyBlackman, and I'm on Twitter @MCScan.
if you know Brian D'Arcy James and think that he would be down to do this podcast and maybe sing on it for us, what the hell are you doing?
Tell him to email us at podcastsmashbros@gmail.com. We'll see you next week on The Great White Way.
And now, Brian D'Arcy James.